Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
A man who was a former astronaut Hall of Fame, a man who climbed Mount Everest, Scott Parazynski, is on the hotline right now.
We've had him on before, and now he's even cooler because I'm an avid drone guy.
So oh, yeah.
Since the very first DJI Phantom came out, and I had to send it to Canada to get the new system put in it so you could even run. Oh, it's crazy. I could tell him stories about crashing those things that were so expensive.
Cutting your arm.
Oh, my God. The Zen Muse gimbal that lasted exactly 6 seconds when you had to buy them from another country. Oh yeah.
Born July 28th in Little Rock, Arkansas, he is a physician, mountaineer, and former astronaut who is a veteran of 5 space shuttle flights and 7 spacewalks. He is former chairman of the board of the Challenger Center for Space Science Education, and these days he's revolutionizing the world of drones with a new one-handed drone controller, the FT Aviator, as CEO of Fluidity Technologies. Please welcome Scott Parazynski.
Hey, Scott, how have you been, man?
Oh, good to be back with you, Johnny. Doing fantastic.
You are.
On the horizon.
You got so much stuff going on, man. But this FT Aviator, I looked at the Kickstarter program. You guys doubled it. You needed 50, and you got, 105,000 for it?
We had a really successful to have our first shipments of a really revolutionary product to help people not crash their drones, basically, to fly more intuitively and get better imagery with them.
Well, it does take a second. I mean, when those things first came out, I was so knocked out by it. I remember buying the very first Phantom and then having to send it up to Canada to a guy who could install some different electronics and brain into it so I could run a first-person view shark, fat shark.
Right.
And then the Zen Muse came out the following year, and the second it was available in July, I had it for a TV shot in August, and I had to buy two, unfortunately, because the first one I hooked up, took it out in the yard, and immediately managed to crash the drone and snap the ribbon cable, which at the time was unfixable.
Oh, man. Yeah, those early drones required a lot of self-assembly there, not easy to manage. They've gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
We're still flying drones the way radio-controlled aircraft were flown in the 1930s, believe it or not. Kind of like an Xbox controller or Sony PlayStation with your two thumbs, which is not intuitive at all. And so we have it all registered off of your thumb tip. So your thumb tip becomes your virtual drone, and anything you do with your thumb, the drone will follow. So you can almost fly subconsciously. It's really powerful and really fun. It's really incredible.
So you push forward with your thumb. It goes forward, backwards. Then what about your pitch and your yaw?
Yeah. So you lift up your thumb to ascend, push it down to descend. You roll the stick to the left. You'll move to the left or right, and then you can twist the stick for yaw, or changing the nose of your drone. So literally, as you move your thumb tip, Your drone is going to follow, and that's in your dominant hand. And then in your other hand, you can control all the camera assets. So instead of having to dive multiple layers deep in an app to control your camera, you can do it right there on the controller. And then we have other really cool, what we call situational awareness cues. So you never lose track of where your drone is in the sky or what direction it's pointing. So it's,
which is really tough. People don't understand unless you fly, because these things are not big, maybe a foot square. And less than that, and once they leave your sight, I mean, you don't know how they're positioned anymore. You've got to go first person viewer and look through the finder. And what happens is you don't realize, because they're symmetrical, you don't know, you can't see the lights on them anymore. There's a red light and a green light on the Phantom that tell you front and back, but you can easily turn the wrong way next to a building, a tree, something in the air, something you got a little close to tape, and it goes bad on you quickly. Because these things now, the distance is a kilometer or more.
That's right, and so many people wrap these things around a tree, or they take it out the first day, they crash it, and then it sits in a closet, $1,000 or $1,500 drone, and it's collecting dust in a closet because they don't feel confident to to pilot it. And we're going to make it possible for people to take their DJI drones out of the off their shelves and get them back in the sky. And they're incredibly powerful tools for enterprise, but also a lot of fun for hobbyists.
Well, when I realized I was traveling to all these great places, and they're so small, and they really are portable now. You can throw them in a backpack, purpose made for them, that'll protect them all the way through. I took it to Curacao to shoot the dolphin stuff. You think, Matt, when I was in Cambodia, if I'd only had those to go above the temples and to prom in Angkor Wat, that would have been absolutely amazing to shoot that. And I realized I really wanted to have better footage of the places I was going. And you got to be careful and obey laws and again, be smart and be polite and use your etiquette. But they are incredible things, man. They really are amazing if you're into photography and into, you know, different positions and point of views.
Absolutely. And there are also tools that benefit society. So, think about public safety, fire, rescue, police, disaster recovery. And I think a drone ought to be in every firehouse, every squad car, every city, municipality ought to have these things to be able to help their citizens in times of need. We're finding more and more important uses for these tools as we move along.
You know, and strangely enough, it's not looking at hillbillies in their farmyards. I'm like, the only guys I ever see get mad, I'm like, look here, hillbilly. I go, you haven't got anything interesting going on. Nobody's looking at your business. You got two skinny donkeys and an old dog. Calm down.
Yeah, I wouldn't know about that.
But you know, because people get so weird about drones, and listen, nobody's spying on you. You're not that interesting. That's the first thing I tell somebody if they ask me. I go, well, what do you got going on that's so great? Nobody's looking at you.
That's right. That's exactly right. And just to kind of expand on what we're doing with Fluidity, the same technology, movement through space, can be used for computer gaming, for virtual reality. And ultimately, my goal is to revolutionize surgical robotics.
That was my question.
Surgical robots are very, very difficult to move around, and we could make it possible for a surgeon there in Kansas City to operate in sub-Saharan Africa with incredible precision and have the same kind of outcome as if they were on the table right there in town.
That was my question. If you're just joining the show, let me reintroduce you, because I want people to know. I mean, we're speaking now with a real astronaut, 5 space flights, 7 spacewalk, Astronaut Hall of Fame, Scott Parazynski. And I wanted to know, I was like, how does an astronaut get into the drone game? And now I see, this is the first step in a much bigger picture.
We've got a huge view on this. Yeah, no, the technology actually came about, I'm a physician by training, and after I left NASA, I was a chief technology officer at the big medical research institute, and that's where I invented the technology primarily for surgical robotics. But as you know, getting through the FDA was a very long, arduous, expensive process. So doing a market analysis, the lowest hanging fruit was to revolutionize drone flight with the same kind of technology. And I love anything that flies. I'm an early adopter of drones as well. I had the same kind of drones that you did in those early days. And so I recognized the need immediately. And so that's what we're doing. We're building our company around this first product line, but ultimately we'll be able to do a lot of other things with it, including medical and surgical.
Well, you should send one over here immediately so you can have some endorsement right away from a goofy radio bastard. We should definitely have one.
I'd love to see you on the controls. I'd love to get your feedback on it.
I'd love to try it. I still love my drone, man, because it is really fun. I've had some terrible crashes. I've made some awful mistakes. It's cost me a lot of propellers, and that's the cheapest part to replace. I've managed to cut my arm terribly. One of the first ones, destroy a gimbal, a Zenmuse 3-axis gimbal that was as expensive as the drone was. Now, thankfully, it's all proprietary and it all works out great. But tough at first. And by the way, I have to ask you, because you're here, you've seen what's happening with India and them shooting down the satellite and producing that space debris that's going to be, they said, above the International Space Station. Now, I imagine there's some uncomfortable people about, they're not very happy about that.
It's a real problem. I think the militarization of space, we've had, observing satellites in space since the very dawn of the space age, of course. But when you think about anti-satellite weaponry, it gets really kind of scary. basically because, you know, creating a debris cloud like that, you can't track the small, you know, particles that are, you know, separated from an explosion. Our Air Force catalogs, I think, about 23,000 different piece parts in orbit and of 2 inches in size or greater. So those things we know about, we can probably get our satellites out of the way or our space station and astronauts out of the way. But things smaller than that, that are still traveling at tens of thousands of miles an hour, can rip through a spacesuit, rip through a module. It's really a dangerous thing, and we shouldn't be doing that kind of activity in space.
No. I mean, people don't understand the amount of debris that's already there, and then the speed that everybody that's going. I mean, some of this, we're talking about, what is a space station? Is it 17.1?
Is about 17,500 miles an hour.
Yeah, and you think about this, and then Japan just shot, and I don't know that it's as big a deal, but they just shot that copper cannonball at about 4,400 miles an hour at an asteroid to break through the surface, and it had to throw some debris up.
Yeah, no, that was out of the sphere of influence of Earth orbit and our satellite system. So that's a little bit different. It's going to another world and collecting samples and science. So it's a little bit of a different mission. But
sure.
Certainly the things that are in Earth orbit, we should not be doing that kind of a destructive activity, because it just leads to potential damage not only to human spacecraft, but our communication satellites and everything else that we have up there.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the bigger picture is, yeah, most likely it's going to be a communication satellite, not a manned space vehicle at this time, because there's so many more of them out there. And that, you're talking about shutting down an incredible amount of information, upload, download. But I mean, imagine this. What happens if a one-inch piece of trash, one inch, very small, hits the International Space Station and pierces the skin?
Yeah, it would depend on where it hits. If it penetrated the hull of the laboratory module, for example, it actually could be a catastrophic kind of a failure. It's no joke up there. Thankfully, there is a lot of shielding aboard the International. I've seen actually out on spacewalks, we call it micrometeor orbital debris, MMOD. And I saw actually a through hole through one of our radiator panels out on the tip of the space station. Thankfully, it missed the ammonia lines coursing through the radiator. It just kind of went through the metal parts supporting these cooling lines and not the ammonia line itself. But it looked like someone had taken a shotgun and just, displayed the thing. It was pretty terrifying, actually.
Sure. Well, you're out there. You were out there for seven of them. Hey, it was MMOD. I mean, you would be nothing. You're just a big meat bag out there. I mean, it would just be instant dead.
I've been called worse.
Yeah. you know. I mean, you have to think about that. What's the occurrence of those MMODs in nobody's, as far as I know, I've never read about anybody doing a walk and being injured by one.
No one's ever been struck, there's 100% oxygen in our spacesuit, so if there was a penetration to the suit, it would actually cause an immediate fire, and it would be game over instantaneously. God. It's not like the movie Gravity, if you saw that, where it was kind of portrayed in a kind of a silly way, but I think there would be an immediate fire, and it would be not a pretty way to go.
Well, the thing is,
no one has ever been hit. But every space shuttle mission that we came back from, the tiles would show evidence of being damaged. Oftentimes, the windows have been hit with small fragments. So, there's stuff out there.
And that's, we all think when we think of an EVA. You think, okay, the thing that we all worry. What if you become detached from the craft? But that's just the beginning. That'll never actually happen. What the real stuff is.
I don't think so. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you.
There's so many other things that you go, good God. I mean, the idea that you're out there, and you've done seven. That, to me, that's like, you can just, as fun as this is now, I don't know that the world will ever get bigger, brighter, and more incredible for you than those moments.
Best job in the universe. I'd never be able to top that life experience when you're outside in your own personal spaceship. It's crazy beautiful.
Do you have a first-person view of that? Was there a camera on your helmet recording everything?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have that? Did they give it to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's you know, it's a great way to kind of remember, reminisce on the experience. But you know, sadly, I've rarely looked at that footage. You know, life gets busy with other things, and I'm always kind of looking forward. But I should go back and look at some of that old footage. It was pretty cool stuff.
Do you ever worry about the magnificent desolation, like Buzz Aldrin was speaking about? Do you ever? I mean, I know it's not the same situation, but it's similar. Like, that's a pretty big world stage, a high moment in an unimaginable moment in most people's lives. Do you worry about watching that and becoming, I don't know, somewhat despondent or depressed because, you know, that time's passed?
Quite honestly, never.
Good man.
I'll tell you why. I'm always kind of looking to the next challenge and the next adventure. So, since I've left NASA, I've spent a couple of seasons on Mount Everest and took a trip to the top. And I'm growing a really exciting startup company and a lot of really fun things happening with my family. So, and travels and all sorts of other things that I want to do. So, my bucket list has never been fuller.
That's nice. And did you summit Everest?
I did. Yeah.
Of course you did. How old were you when you made the summit at Everest?
I was 47.
47? Dude, I've kind of given up the idea of climbing a mountain at this point at 50. And so, I mean, at 47, you made summit at Everest. I mean, and people don't know. That's that nigh to impossible.
I'll tell you what. I actually summited with a buddy of mine. His name is Dawes Eddie. You'd love him. He's an incredible guy. Gosh, I don't know. I could calculate it, but at the time, he was actually the oldest American to summit Everest, and I think he was 66.
Jesus.
He's got some time ahead of you, man.
That seems impossible. I mean, it really does. Knowing what I know about Everest and reading about it all the time,
it's rough. It's really rough. It's the toughest physical thing I've ever done in my life, no doubt about it.
And you've been through the astronaut program, which we were laughing the other day talking about the original astronaut program with Apollo's. And just the centrifuge and the stuff they were like kind of just guessing at what it might be like up there and just putting people through terrible, terrible stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They're shooting in the dark at that point, for sure.
It's man, when you were a kid, when you were growing up, where was it?
My dad was with the Apollo program as very young. So he worked on the Saturn V boosters from New Orleans, Louisiana. And so that was you know, what every kid on the block wanted to do, that we all wanted to be astronauts. I just never grew out of it.
No, I don't imagine you really can. I mean, there's no greater honor. There's no greater hero. There's no greater explorer than astronaut. I mean, just there isn't. There'll never be another one like that. I mean, it is the end all be all.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. No, I think there are a lot of, wonderful ways to contribute to society. And I was certainly thankful to be in the right place at the right time. And, having been born in this country that was bold enough to have a space program in the first place, we're very lucky in this country. And, certainly I was having great parents who supported me and kind of pursuing this crazy dream of mine.
When you were a kid, did you get to go see a Saturn V booster up close?
I did, and I actually went and saw Apollo 9 launch, which wasn't the full stack, I saw it from the beach there in Cocoa Beach, Florida. My dad actually was on site at the Kennedy Space Center. We were a few miles away, but I mean, you could feel it through your chest. I mean, it was the most powerful thing I've ever seen.
And then from that moment to the moment you sat, and they were it was an all go. And I mean that could you remember that like yesterday? I mean, is it a blur or is it clear as a bell?
Clear as a bell. Those were amazing days. Of course, I remember the lunar landing of Apollo 11 on July 20th, 1969. I was 7 years old and watching it on a black and white TV. My parents let me stay up late. I think it was a little bit after 9 p.m. And watching Neil and Buzz on the moon and then walking outside and looking up at the moon and realizing astronauts were out there. It was
unbelievable.
That really set my course in life.
No, there's no greater idea than that. And that's why I've just gotten to a point in my life now where I'm not mad at moon deniers, the moon hoax guys. Right? Now I'm no longer angry. I just look at them like they're somebody with a head injury. But
yeah, right.
But you just think, you know, you the disrespect those guys, what they'd done, what they had accomplished, what they'd managed to come back alive from. It's an impossibility, and who knows what the odds really were. And the fact they did it with
they're larger than life.
Yeah,
those guys were so incredibly brave, incredible patriots, and I'm excited by what's been proposed lately. I don't know where the budget is coming from, but you know, to get Americans back to the moon and
be great,
and really on a course to Mars. I hope that's going to happen.
Man, I would literally sell my house, the motorcycles, everything, the land, just for one shot at going into a real orbital space.
Oh yeah, well, you're going to be able to do that, and hopefully you won't have to sell all those things. But companies like Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin, SpaceX are going to make that possible. And I think in 20 years or so, many of us here on planet Earth will become astronauts. We'll board a space plane from the States and be in Japan in 50 minutes, that kind of a thing.
Be amazing. Amazing. Look, Scott,
yeah.
You come through Kansas City, you stop by here anytime. I want everybody to check out the FT Aviator. If you're a drone owner, this is a one-handed drone controller, the way it was supposed to be, the way NASA told you it should have been, instead of a remote control car, you know, because gizmo. And that's all they had to go off, was they just went with an RC controller and adapted it to flying, which is not going to be the most intuitive way. It's going to be the way NASA did it and the way they're still using it. It's the FT Aviator. And how can people get that, by the way?
If they go to our website, fluidity.tech, fluidity.tech, and it's on pre-sale for $300. It's going to retail for $449. So get them while you can at that low price. And we'd love to see you up in the skies with an FT Aviator.
I'm a huge fan, Scott. I appreciate you taking some time this morning.
Thanks a lot.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.